Welcome to DIY Portland. I'm Julie Sabatier, and this is a monthly show about revolutionary do-it-yourself projects. Last month, the show was in Woodburn, Oregon, where a tree pickers and farm workers union was building their own low-power station. It was inspiring to be part of the event that launched a new voice onto our local airwaves, and it got me thinking about what it must have been like when KABU first got started. So I went back into KABU's archives and listened to the voices from our past on reel-to-reel tape. Here is a small sample of what I heard.
Hi, this is Ern Hood with another historical vignette from the KABU Attic of Dusty Memories. 27th of June, 1967. Dear Ben F. Wapple, Secretary, FCC, Washington, D.C. Dear Mr. Wapple, this is in reference to the recent grant of construction permit to the Jack Straw Memorial Foundation for a new non-commercial FM station in Portland, Oregon. We would like to submit the following call letters for the new station's identification. KBOO, KZEN, KAZU, KRAC, KLSR, listener-supported radio, to give the Straits a chance, he says. Thank you sincerely, Lorenzo W. Milam, President, the Jack Straw Memorial Foundation.
Ern Hood was a local jazz musician who got involved with KABU in its first year. But the real impetus for the station, before that letter was ever written to the FCC, came from a woman named Lloyd Livingston. Livingston was a Portland housewife who loved classical music, and she was distressed when KGMG, Portland's only classical station, changed its format to easy listening. Miss Livingston wrote a letter to the editor of the Oregon Journal, which was printed on May 30, 1964. In her letter, she decried the loss of classical music on the airwaves in favor of elevator music. "Are there others eager to engage against air pollution?" she wrote. From responses to that letter, Miss Livingston began holding meetings to start a listener-sponsored radio station here in Portland. Eventually, she got in touch with a man named Lorenzo Milam, who had started a number of community stations, including one called KRAB, or CRAB, in Seattle. CRAB and its parent organization, the Jack Straw Memorial Foundation, helped KABU get off the ground. Milam sent someone named David Calhoun down to Portland to set up the equipment. Here is Calhoun's version of the story.
The first night in Portland, I spent the night on the floor of an old friend of this place, Ernie Hood, who was the real mainstay of support in those early months. Even though he couldn't do much physically, he'd had polio and was in a wheelchair. He was the one who had the patience to drag me through the months and months and months of trying to get our permit to actually broadcast something. The equipment was in place for months. It was 9 months that I was here. It had been there some time before that, before we finally got the telegram, which gave us permission to send something other than beeps and honks. The equipment I had for this was my Blaupunkt car radio for a monitor and a couple of screwdrivers and a list of names of people who might possibly help. Harold Singleton was a senior broadcast engineer in Portland. He had a house utterly atop Healy Heights, and behind his house was a little 20-foot antenna tower. And onto that antenna tower, somehow Lorenzo and crew had managed to tack a homemade imitation antenna. In the garage was our transmitter, the phasotron modulating tube. But the stuff was stacked up in Harold's garage behind the packing crate in which he'd shipped a bunch of antiques back from Spain, and on the other side of a paging transmitter whose signal kept getting into our audio line, so we'd turn on the transmitter and we'd get someone saying, "There are no messages at present."
KABU went on the air officially in June of 1968. Gray Hartig was one of the station's first engineers.
It was 10 watts out of the transmitter. You know, this is about the same power as your average Christmas tree bulb. And with the antenna, you could get a little more power. It was 40 watts. But we covered the Portland market spottily, but we covered it with 40 watts. We had subscribers as far away as Washougal. you know, but we had to instruct people on how to tune their FM radio to find us, and, you know, but it was interesting is people would really go and make the effort to try to find KABU. You know, there was this dedicated listening audience. Transmitter was this wonderful clunker from 1948 at Collins with meters everywhere, you know. And then lots of dials and knobs. You could twist things all over the place and meters would do anything. But the way you really tuned it was we had this 7.5-watt Christmas tree light. And it had two wires soldered onto it. Just wires, one going to one side and one going to the other. And it was pinned to the ceiling of the studio. And you tuned the transmitter till the light bulb got brightest. I mean, there wasn't any money. Calhoun's salary was $50 a month. The station's operating budget was $50 a month above his salary. I technically got $50 a month as chief engineer, but I never took it. My salary was 2 Sleazeburgers a week. That was what I demanded. Be hauled down to the local hamburger joint and be given 2 Sleazeburgers a week. And that was it. That was, you know, what the station ran on. So it was an 8x12 studio with a little itty-bitty board in the corner and a couple of enormous turntables that looked like washing machines. And Calhoun's ancient consumer-grade Ampex tape recorder that was permanently out of the case because it had to be fixed all the time and it was too hard to get it in and out of the case. That all lived in one end. And Calhoun's sleeping bag kind of rolled out in the middle and then his harpsichord in the other end. And that was KABU. And he would go over every day to Multnomah County Library and get interesting records to play. And he would play them. And occasionally other people would come in and help, but not very often. It was a station clearly inspired and run by people who believed in things of the mind that thought that were intellectual, you know.
KABU's programming was very freeform at that point. Much of it depended on volunteers taping events in the Portland community. Here's Gray Hartig again with another early KABU engineer known as Pooh Rogers.
I mean, sort of the informal motto was, if it makes noise, tape it. And if you were a volunteer at KABU, KABU, when it signed on the air, didn't have programs. People didn't come in to do their little shtick on the radio, you know, because the philosophy was that the radio station owned the hours and then they would bring in people to do things. And one of the things to get the community back out to the community was to go tape stuff. And so you could go to any event in town that was happening. Lectures, you know, political rallies, virtually every concert that wasn't being handled, covered by the straight media that you could get into. And there was KABU, the tape recorder in the front and a microphone with this lovely little banner, triangular banner that Sue Police sewed for us. It's
the Ampex 600.
The Ampex 600.
Size of a small suitcase.
Mm-hmm.
And twice as heavy.
There were some regular programmers at the station in the late 60s and early 70s. One was Barbara Bernstein, who continues to host Locus Focus Talk Radio on Wednesday mornings.
Well, when I first came to Portland, there was this kind of small counterculture community of which KABU was a part. And so if you knew anybody in the counterculture in Portland in 1971, you kind of wound up at KABU. And then the first program I ever did here was a special preemption when there were riots at Attica State Prison in September 1971. And some friends and I, who had all just arrived here from New York, took over the station and did like a four-hour special about what was going on in Attica. What really got exciting, though, was in the summer of 72, women started getting more organized around KABU and kind of demanding programming. And in those days, the way you did something was you kind of demanded it. You know, you had your list of demands and you barged in and you sat in or whatever.
Liz Dolly was another early KABU volunteer.
I lived about a block from the KABU studios on Belmont Street. The person I was living with at the time, who I'm now married to, and I both worked there in various capacities back in the wild days of KABU. And I'm not exactly sure how we ended up volunteering at KABU. It might have been that we were just walking by down Belmont Street one day and saw what was going on in there, and it looked kind of interesting, and we wandered in. Who knows? But we both got interested enough in what was happening to go and get our third phone licenses. I helped do a women's show on Friday afternoons where we played what was then the emerging women's music and interviews with various activists from the women's liberation movement, and as well as tapes that we'd gotten from other sources. I remember the women having to be rather strident in order to make their mark and get the airtime that they wanted. And then sometimes KABU would just call us up and on odd hours, like usually it was early on Sunday morning or something like that, when someone hadn't showed up to do their shift, because we were only a block away, and they would call for us to come down, and I'd go and do something that I had no idea what I was doing, like playing classical music. But I think that KABU is really like no other station in Portland or anywhere else that I've ever seen. KABU has always struck me as what radio and public access to radio is really all about, and it's such a treasure for this community. I look back at the brief time that I was involved as something that was really important to me and special to me in retrospect, because KABU has always struck me as one of the wellsprings of culture in Portland. You know, you hear it here, it happens here years before it happens other places. And, you know, that's a real important thing.
I'd say not all that much has changed at this DIY radio station we call KABU. When people wanted to hear something different on the airwaves, they did it themselves. And we're still doing it ourselves with the generous support of the listening community. Right now, I'd like to broaden the scope a little and hear from some people in the larger world of grassroots radio. The following is a collection of voices of radio activists from community stations all over the country.
Hi, I'm Kate Coyer.
I'm Otis McClay from Pacifica.
My name is Patricia Wade, and I'm a tribal member of Chicoloon Village in Alaska.
Hi, I'm the V-Man, and I'm from Freak Radio Santa Cruz.
My name is Jody Darby. I'm from KABU in Portland.
Ernesto Aguilar, KPFT Houston.
I'm Bear from KMUG in Redway, California.
Hello, I'm TJ Rhino, and I'm with Free Radio Olympia.
I'm Pete Tredish from the Prometheus Radio Project in Philadelphia.
And I'm Sakura Saunders.
Elizabeth Robinson from KCSB and from AMARC, which is the World Association of Community Radio Broadcasters. Radio is the most pervasive, most accessible, most affordable medium that exists. And it's the only one that I know of that can fully allow people to not only receive information, but to disseminate it.
Radio can change the world.
Radio is often a beacon of light in a world of darkness.
Radio can permit communities that have been disenfranchised historically and systematically an opportunity to tell their own stories and their own histories and their own voices.
And I feel like I'm part of a great movement.
To have a media where someone might actually say, you know what, don't buy anything today. Nothing. Don't buy anything. We don't care if you buy anything. It's just such a different thing, and it's so important.
Radio has the power to reach such a wide spectrum of people. And I think one of the most exciting things about community radio is when people who've never discovered community radio is just messing around with the dial and trips over something, and they hear someone that sounds just like they might sound. And then, you know, they're hooked.
Radio is the most personal medium. You are talking into people's brains.
It changes your perspective. It changes your actions, too, because you tend to get more involved.
on the left, what the left wants is some facts and some, you know, some substance that they can cogitate. They don't want to be told what to believe. They just want to be given information so they can figure out what the hell's going on.
I got started in radio during the WTO protests in Seattle.
I got started back during the days of Watergate.
I sort of fell into radio. I mean, I just, like, there was the pirate station in town. Eventually, we got shut down by the city, and we were evicted. So we put the station in a bike cart and broadcast, like, mobily with a little, you know, car battery or whatever, 12-volt battery.
I was really into radio when I was in the second grade. I was a reporter for WSUD, Sudley Elementary School radio.
I went to college and I met this guy. He was a radio DJ. He was like, why don't you come down to my show sometime? So I did. They had lots of records.
I went down to the college radio station before I even started classes. And I had like 300 favorite punk bands, and, you know, I thought I would make a great DJ. And, you know, of course, then I realized that the music world was so much bigger than I had ever imagined.
So radio can inform, and it can entertain, and it can uplift, and it can provoke thought. And that's my favorite things about radio. Sybil Augustine, WORT.
Radio will keep us talking.
I think it can enable us to work together. Work together on producing the radio, and work together having heard what comes out of the radio, inspiring us to make change and move on.
You're going to edit this, right?
Thank you, Julie.
Thank you, Otis. You are listening to DIY Portland, and I'm your host, Julie Sabatier. This month's show is all about radio. We took a look back at KBOO's history, and we heard from some radio activists in the greater grassroots community. I'd like to thank KBOO's archivist, Bruce Silverman, and our morning news and public affairs director, Kathleen Stevenson, for their help with the historical portion of the show. And I'd like to thank you for listening. If you're hearing my voice right now, then you are a part of this amazing thing we call community radio, the ultimate do-it-yourself project. This is a short show because KBOO is in the midst of our fall membership drive. I've cut out the section where we ask people to give money on the air, but I encourage you to make a contribution to your local radio station. And tune in next month for a regular full-length show on the third Thursday, that's November 16th, at 10 a.m. on KBOO Portland, where you can always access past and future shows, podcasts, and downloads by visiting me at www.myspace.com/JulieOnTheRadio. Thanks for listening.